Australia on the Triple M network. Triple M! Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
G'day, Todd.
G'day, Luke.
How are you, mate?
Good, good. Thought I'd let you ask first. No, fantastic here in Hobart. It's absolutely buckling down with rain. It's freezing cold. And Luke, when a black man in a wheelchair, he ain't always crippled.
Hey? Eh?
In relation to your 13 inches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 13 and a half.
13 and a half. Well, if only we all had that problem.
Do you remember that porn? He's dead now. I think he actually died of AIDS. John Holmes?
No, mate, I don't. No.
You Google John Holmes, and after you do, delete your history. Holmes, I think it was. He reckons he used to brag he had 12 inches.
Wow.
He was a very well-known porn star during the 70s.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Boogie Nights. Remember that movie Boogie Nights with Mark Wahlberg and Burt Reynolds?
Yep.
Well, they reckon that that movie was loosely based on John Holmes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice to look it up. But as you say, delete the history.
Well, but the argument was if it was 12 inches, it wouldn't be a dick, it'd be a foot.
Oh, dear. Poor Jess.
No, she's got headphones on now. I censor myself. I put a cone of silence around her.
Oh, right. Good one.
Anyway, 13 and a half.
Crazy stuff.
Do you reckon women really care?
You know what, mate? I don't. I don't think they do. I don't think they do.
Yeah.
It's what you say. It's you've been told by the ones that love you that it's how you use it.
It's the magician, not the wand. Yes,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. They could be lying though.
Yeah, they could be too.
Remember Elaine in Seinfeld? Fake. Anyway, you're in Hobart.
Yeah.
Did you watch this bloke put himself in the ground?
Look, I did see some of it, and I'm all for art and everything. And this festival draws attention every year for some sort of controversy. Like last year, they slaughtered a bull, and then they did a show in its blood, and everyone was rolling around its guts and its blood and all that sort of crap, and which I don't consider art. Some people do, you know, each to their own. But to give you an idea, Luke, and I did put a couple of photos on your Facebook page, Macquarie Street, Hobart, is a main arterial route through the city. Like
that was Jess talking. Jess, go on.
If it's blocked, you know, it causes major congestion. So it is at night. But it just goes to show how much money talks with the Hobart City Council, doesn't it? Because we can't even get our roads fixed yet. Yeah, they're digging gigantic holes in the middle of a main arterial route to stick someone inside it. Crazy stuff.
Yeah, no, I saw it. It just showed it to me. There's a little movie there. I think it might have, was that on news.com.au? Anyway, there's a small crowd of people there. The weather looked atrocious. There were people digging up the ground in high-vis shirts. There was a tractor, wasn't it? Some sort of a bulldozer or a ground digger?
Yeah, that's Hobart City Council digging up the streets to bury someone under the road. So they've upset a few people this time, the old dark mofo. I mean, it is good for the state. It brings people from all over Australia and the world to the festival. They've also lit crosses this year and hung them upside down the waterfront. That's upset a few religious people as well. So they try to engage in controversy, and they succeed every year.
Dark mofo. Now, Tasmania seems to be the capital of the world for confrontational art because of MONA. The museum,
yeah, that's right.
Museum of Old and New Art.
Yep.
David Walsh, from memory, is the bloke who is the brainchild. He's got so much money. Squillionaire. Good morning, David. I know you listen. Jeez, I'd love to talk to him on air. He's a character.
Yes, made his millions from gambling.
Yeah, he's a mathematical genius, apparently, and has been allegedly warned off racetracks and casinos everywhere because he just keeps winning.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah. I'd love to talk to him. Getting back to Dark Mofo, whose idea was all of this and where does it come from?
Well, as far as I'm aware, it stemmed from David Walsh and MONA. Many years ago, they came up with the idea to have the festival, and they tie in the solstice with it as well, the nude swim down at Sandy Bay Beach in the middle of
winter.
June, I think that is, in the middle of winter. And And as I say, it does draw a huge crowd, and they have a huge winter feast coming up, I think, next weekend, over a couple of weekends, where it runs for about 24 hours, a day or something like that, and you can go and eat as much as you want and, you know, pay for it, obviously, and it's just a huge, great big festival. But it does attract some interesting people.
I bet it does. I bet it does. Yes, as I said, Tasmania is famous for strange art now, really.
That's right, and I've never been to Mona. It's been here for and years and years. I've been up in there, but I've never actually been into the museum.
Oh, do it.
Yeah, never been there.
You have to do it and be prepared to be shocked. And that's what David wants you to be. He wants you to be shocked. In fact, ages ago, I think if you were from Tasmania, you got in for free.
You do. It is discounted. And you've obviously been, mate. Do they still have the Wall of Vaginas in there?
Wall of Vaginas. They look, I came out a little bit stunned. I can't remember everything. I remember there was a very, very confrontational, huge ceiling-to-floor mural, if that's the way, or an art piece of Burke and Wills. And it's I can't even on air tell you what it was. There was, as you go down through the layers, down floor after floor, I forget how many floors it is, you go right down into the ground. I saw all these people sitting on beanbags looking up at the ceiling.
Yeah.
And I wondered what they were doing. And when you get down there to their level, you look up, and up on the ceiling is a movie that's been projected. And it was a movie, or it was footage of a woman menstruating.
Oh, wow, really?
Hmm.
Yeah.
I missed out on the poo room. He's got a big room there, which is your gastrointestinal intestines.
And, that's right.
And basically, he makes poo, and people walk through.
Yeah, you can feed it, can't you? You can feed it. It shows how you create that.
It shows how you create poo, and it smells just like it. I missed that one. I think that must have come in after I was there.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I mean, it's crazy, weird stuff. But one day I'll get there. But
well, you live
not
there.
In a hurry. Yeah, that's right. I do. I drive past it probably 20 times a day, but I've never been in there.
Go and do it.
I will. I might need to take the wife and
take the wife. Don't, no, don't stuff. Don't take the kids. Once upon a time, you used to wear this. It was like a pendant that you wore around your neck. Everyone got handed one when you went in, and you had it connected headphones to it, and it knew exactly what piece of art you were standing in front of. The art must transmit some sort of signal anyway, and you got to rate how you felt about each piece. And if something got too many likes, he got rid of it.
Ah, really?
Yeah, and he put something else in.
Right, right. But just back to the money side of it. Look, it does piss me off, mate, where we face huge issues with our roads, and they're state government roads, and huge issues with traffic congestion and stuff, but they can dig a massive hole in the road to put someone in it. And this is the second time they've done it once as a practice. Now they've done it again tonight, and then I have to do it again to get him back out.
To get him out.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff.
I wonder how much it costs.
I'd like to know.
Oh, we'll see if we can find out. Listen, good to hear from you.
Maybe the Lord Mayor of Hobart's got 13.5 inches. Oh, but anyway.
You never know. Hey, Todd, thanks for your call.
No worries, Luke. Have a good night.
Thank you, mate. There you go. Todd from Hobart listening to us on the Triple M Network. Yeah, so I don't know how much it's cost, but they've dug a big... It's on our Facebook, Jess. This guy. Is it on Facebook?
Oh.
You're doing it now.
Yep.
Yeah. a street... What's he describe himself as? An artist, a street artist. Mike Parr, 73. He's going to live beneath Macquarie Street in Hobart for 3 days. And it's all in the name of art. How is that art? Can someone explain it to me? G'day, Karen.
Hey Luke, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you? I'm a bit.
It's good, thanks.
I'm a bit nervous.
Oh, no need to be nervous.
Oh, Karen, I'm nervous. Whereabouts are you?
Oh, I'm in Sydney.
Okay, why are you up?
I'm picking my son up from work.
Oh, you good girl. Where's your son work?
He works at Rose Hill Racecourse.
What's he do there? Oh, don't. He might identify him. Anyway, he doesn't have a license.
No, because he was born with one hand. We've got to get modifications made and things. So, yeah, just trying to get that all sorted for him.
Okay, good on you. What are we talking about, Karen?
Does size matter?
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Karen.
Okay, it definitely does if it's too big.
Oh, okay, go on.
Okay, I've found in the past it hasn't been enjoyable if it's too big.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
loving this. Go on. I feel better now.
Yeah. No, it can be a bit painful, but I can't speak for every woman though.
Well, you can't speak for every woman. I understand that, but where do we get the impression that big is great and women love big? You know.
I think that comes from men.
Yeah, does it?
Yeah.
And does it also come from pornography?
Yeah, probably, but, I mean, well, the pornography that I've seen, you know, it's not pleasing to even look at if it's too big.
Really?
Yeah, oh, for me, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, definitely. Although I have had too small as well, and that was just, it was okay, but, yeah.
So what's the right size then? This guy reckons he's the biggest in the world with 13 and a half. There's another bloke who reckons he's bigger. 13 and a half. Too big?
Just a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's really hard to come up with a size comparison. I mean, like, you know, you can't, like, say, like, a handful, like guys do.
Tell me.
I can't think.
Tell me this. You sound quite progressive. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
When you were growing up, did your mum prepare you? Did you have a talk? Did she?
From a young age, like, I was given, my brothers and I were both given the same picture book, which started off with little Johnny on the farm asking why the animals were doing certain things, and then it went into the whole scientific part of it. But then, as I got older, my mum did prepare me.
She prepared you. What did she say?
It was more like explaining that, the first few times you were going to do it, it was going to hurt, wasn't going to be enjoyable, but the more you did it, it was going to be very enjoyable, and to always speak up if it wasn't.
Yeah. And was it painful the first time? Do you remember your first?
Yes. Yeah.
How old were you?
I was about 17.
17?
Yeah. And it was, yeah.
And was it with someone you really liked?
Yes.
Okay. So it was a boyfriend?
Yes. Boyfriend, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the first probably 5 or 6 times. It did hurt, but I think, being young and, he was a bit gung-ho kind of thing. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Karen. Size doesn't matter. Yay!
No.
Well, too small is no good.
Oh, no, yeah, too small. I mean, like, if you're talking, size of a finger, I guess, yeah. No.
We talked about it. Why do we always talk about this when Simon comes in? We were talking last week, or was it the week before, about a girl who said she had a bloke whose penis was only as large as a thumb.
Oh, okay.
And a bloke rang up and said, was his name Justin?
Oh, that's hilarious. I missed that one because I work shift work. So when I'm working, I listen to you, but I missed that one.
What do you do?
I'm security.
Okay.
I actually work in a control room.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's lovely to meet you, Karen. Please ring again.
Oh, thank you. I will.
What are you going to do on the weekend?
I'm actually sewing a dress for a fancy dress high tea.
You are a sewer.
Yes.
See, now, I was told that sewing and knitting were lost arts.
I was taught from a young age. I did it in high school. My youngest son, my 16-year-old, he's learning how to sew because he does cosplay, and I got sick of doing it. So
he does what?
He cosplay. So, sewing costumes to go to places like Supernova and Comic-Con and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, and because I don't want to be making them all the time, he's learning how to sew now.
Do you know what? My mum was a very, very, very good sewer,
mm-hmm.
and she used to make things. And she made me and my sister Superman outfits.
Oh, yes.
And I remember walking along in my Superman outfit and being stopped by a number of mums saying to her, "Where'd you get that? Where did you get it?" It was very good.
Yeah, no, it's also satisfying when you get comments about things and they're like, "Where did you get it?" I made it. You can't have one.
Good on you, Karen. Nice to talk to you. Thank you for the reassurance.
That's all right. Thanks. Bye.
Sean, g'day.
G'day. How are you?
Where are you, Sean?
Queanbeyan, New South Wales.
Okay, near Canberra. You're in for a coldie.
Yeah, it is going to be a cold one.
It's going to be very cold, Sean.
Yeah. Sorry, I got my dog to keep me warm.
You're used to it. Oh, God, okay. what's up, Sean?
Mate, I just wanted to make a comment about your the drones. I was looking online last year, and they were bringing out a hover bike.
Yeah,
I've seen a motorbike. Yeah, but they're pretty pricey.
How much?
I think they're about $70,000.
Do you know what? I reckon people will pay that.
Oh, mate. Like one guy said one day, he said... He was a comedian. He said, how many of you out there in the audience can afford a deposit on a house? And nobody put their hand up. And then he said, if they could make a lightsaber for $20,000, who would buy one tomorrow? And everyone put their hand up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the way it is. If people want something, they'll buy it.
If people want something, they'll buy it, yes. I had a look online at some of these hover bikes. Now, what Uber are talking about is it's almost like an aircraft, but it's an aircraft, but it runs... like a drone.
Yeah, like electrical and electric motors and rechargeable batteries.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know how much these flights would be, but if you could fly directly from the airport to the city or even to your home, would you do it?
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about autonomous.
No, I don't know. I'd want a pilot.
Well, at least a stick to grab hold of and do something. You know, like something there in the middle that somebody can get hold of if they have to.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be some sort of emergency takeover of some sort, obviously, because you're in the air. Somebody's going to be able to take over if something goes wrong.
Unless it's got cameras and sensors everywhere and it's flown via remote control from a control room.
Well, that could be done too.
Hmm.
That would probably be the safest way to do it.
But what
and have GPS and proximity sensors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm having a look at these hover bikes. There's one here. It says it's a hover bike for the Dubai police. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't actually.
Have a look at that. Have a look at that.
I will have a look at that when I get online.
And there's another one, the Scorpion 3. I think that's the one you were looking at.
Probably. Yeah, it was only a prototype that they had.
Oh, I want one.
Oh, so do I.
How high?
Did you see the submarine that Aston Martin brought out?
No.
Aston Martin, sorry. They brought out a personal submarine, holds three people. It's worth $4.5 million.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's awesome.
Tell me about it. I'll have a look for it.
Yeah, if you look up Aston Martin personal submarine, it takes three people, one pilot and two passengers. Yeah, and it's basically for the rich people with the toys, you know. But it looks like it'd be an awesome piece of gear to have under the ocean.
Oh, it's the Triton. Is it the Triton?
I think it's the Triton, yeah. I think that's what it was called.
$4 million luxury submarine, Aston Martin.
That's the one.
Yeah, look at that.
Isn't it amazing what they're bringing out?
Project Neptune.
You wouldn't want it in camper in the lake because you wouldn't see anything, but, you know. Barrier Reef or somewhere like that'd be all right.
Oh, there's another one here for $7 million.
Oh, really?
It's actually on sale.
Oh, there you go. On sale for $7 million. Yeah, right. Okay.
It's on sale for $7 million. Aston Martin submarine's gone on sale for $7 million. Aston Martin, known for creating cars for James Bond, has released a submarine with a luxury interior, all for the bargain basement price of $7 million. And
that's
it is.
Australian.
Yes.
So it would be $4.5 million American, $7 million Australian.
Very flash.
Unreal, eh?
It is unreal.
Money. Be good to have money.
Wouldn't it? Anyway, yeah, so they reckon that the Uber hover will be here by 2020.
Yeah, see, I'm a mechanic by trade. I get a bit worried about this autonomous sort of stuff. And, yeah, who's going to maintain it? Who's going to check it? You know, that sort of thing is... How often will it be checked?
Well, everyone was thinking it was all moving very, very quickly until there was that lady that was killed, the cyclist.
With the car. Because it couldn't pick up what it was.
It didn't pick it up and it hit her.
And our technology, our cameras and our technology just aren't quite capable of picking up that movement quick enough yet.
Yeah. So that put the brakes, if you'll pardon the pun, on all of that.
Yep.
So I don't know. Autonomous cars.
It's going to be the same with flying. Yeah. What if there's a bird in the way or a hang glider or, you know what I'm saying? Like a power line or a balloon. Anything. It's got to be able to pick it up and maneuver out of its way.
Yeah. Well, they once said that man would never land on the moon.
That's true.
And I still
we've never been back.
We have been back.
We have.
Yeah. Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin weren't the last people there. There have been other moon landings.
Okay, righto.
Yeah.
It hasn't been publicised, obviously. So.
But they're obviously thinking, what's the point? And God, it costs a lot to get here.
Yeah, exactly right. And all it is grey dust.
Yeah. But I think Mars is the next place point of interest.
Most definitely.
Anyway, Sean, good to talk to you. You stay warm this weekend. You're going to need to rug up.
No worries. Thank you.
Well, all I can say to you, Peter, is you've made a bit of a name for yourself now.
What have I done?
Oh, mate, the supermarket story, mate, it's become legend.
I'll tell you what, mate, there's been a couple of good supermarket stories, hasn't there?
There have, but I think you win.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
How old were you?
16 to 18, mate.
16 to 18. We won't say what supermarket.
No.
But you saw the girl in the deli.
Yep.
Fruit and veggies?
No, it was fruit and veg, meat department and deli.
Fruit and veg.
Fruit and veg, meat department, deli.
Didn't you have the dairy as well?
No.
Okay, but you married the checkout chick.
The checkout, yep, still with her, mate.
Now, the checkout chick knew about the deli and the fruit.
Yep, and I even told the missus when I went home, I said I told her, and she, you're a bloody idiot.
How far apart were all these relationships, or did they overlap?
No, we're talking over a 2-year period.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You're a legend.
Hey, buddy, you know, just before we get to the main story, that university.
The one in Melbourne?
No, when we were talking about should people pay for an education, I say yes.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, I think it should be free up to, obviously, in high school years, right through to year 12. Like, you know, you got to pay them for kids' woodwork and everything like that. That should be free. But as far as university, definitely should be paid for. Mate, these universities are actually running like a business, which we all know. Mm. They're promising everyone that they're going to get positions when they come out of it. When they come out, I've got a mate, it's a radiographer. Mate, he had to travel nearly 200 kilometres, and they said there'd be work around locally.
Mm.
They just fill them full of whatever and getting their money off them and then send them packing.
Yeah. Graham Winter said that universities are being irresponsible. They're doing whatever they can to get students in because they get the money.
Yep.
But there aren't the jobs there when you get out.
Mate, there's too many overqualified university students, and I think there should be more tradies. That's where to go to is the trades.
Yeah.
And mate, the army, you remember your army with the flag and that?
Yeah.
Mate, what annoys me is probably not the flag, but with the SAS, they're all carrying on about, you know, apparently like some of what these SAS guys done. My opinion is, mate, when you train these guys up at Rambo and they're fighting for their life and they're in a war, I'm sorry, you wanted to put that NRMA out on, you know, put your arms around me and, you know, resuscitate a cat, like... Come on, mate. You know, they're in war.
Yeah.
And righto, it wasn't right, that flag. But in the end, it didn't have to go there. And all I had to say, boys, pull your head in, mate. They're in war, mate. You know, like, and you got Turnbull having a bit of a dig saying it's not right. Well, he can get over there and have a go himself.
I thought the flag was a bad look.
It was a bad look. It shouldn't have made media.
The Nazi flag. Well, look, I tell you what. It happened back in 2007.
Yeah.
The ABC's only just got hold of it. I thought that the swastika flag was a bad look. But as I said in my introduction, I've never been in the ADF. The training's very, very intense. And you send these young men over to the Middle East, to Afghanistan, to fight against an enemy, you know, that has no rules.
Yep.
What rules are there? What rules of engagement are there when you're fighting an enemy that is prepared to use chemical weapons against its own people?
Mate, let's face it. When you're going over there and when you're trained up, you've got to turn into a bit of an enemy. You've got to, otherwise you're going to get killed.
I would love to hear from someone who's been overseas, who's been to the Middle East. I'm in no position to defend or attack members of the ADF because there are allegations that war crimes have been committed, that people have just been shot. I was watching the ABC the other night, and there were a group of men who said that their uncles and their brothers were just rounded up by Australians and shot in a room. The Australians said that, no, the men were armed and they were shot in combat. I wasn't there. I don't know.
That's right.
I wasn't there.
Exactly, mate. And I'll take my hat off to every single one of them, because I tell you now, I wouldn't like to be over there. And mate, take my hats off to all of them. But, and you know one thing, Luke? I never would want to be, for example, Gallipoli, right?
Oh.
Now, how would have you felt? They've shot hundreds of thousands of yous at the beach. You've got up to the top of near the turrets, and we've got about 40 people wanting to surrender. Now, I don't know about you, Luke, but I'll tell you now, I wouldn't have been holding too many hostages, mate, if they just killed 100,000 of us. I'm telling you now.
What are the rules? What are the rules?
Mate, it's just horrible. Hey, mate, getting off that subject, I can't believe that old mate, when you're talking about the museum, you telling me you couldn't remember if you'd seen a whole wall full of vaginas in the museum.
I would say it probably wasn't there when I was there. Otherwise, I think you're right. I would remember it.
I think you would definitely remember it. Definitely.
But let me tell you, have you been to Tasmania?
I have, but I've never been there, but I'm going to go down and definitely have a look at it.
Oh, go and spend a week there, at least a week.
Yeah,
and have a really good look around and go for a drive to Lonnie and go for a drive to Devonport. But when you're in Hobart, go and see this Mona.
I definitely will put that on the list. Definitely. If I go down there, I'll be going for sure.
Oh.
And, mate, I do remember Johnny with his moustache.
Who?
Johnny Holmes, mate.
Oh, Johnny.
Mate, not that I, you know, wasn't much of an animal. Mate, I always try to grow a moustache like him, but, mate, I'm not that hairy a person.
Yeah, they call it the 70s porn star look.
Mate, every time you see a moustache, mate, you'd say to a young bloke, you're trying to look like Johnny Holmes. I go, what?
Johnny Holmes.
And do you reckon, I would never want a disability, but I'll tell you what, to have a disability like the one you're talking about, going on, what, so a disability, so they get the pension, to too large a penis.
Yeah, that's in America.
Mate, would he have a sticker like you got to carry out, you know, to park in the wheelchair area, like you said, a three-legged sticker on his car or something?
Dear, oh dear.
You reckon he would?
This bloke who has the 13.5-inch, his name is, it sounds like a TV, doesn't it? His name is Jonah Falcon. And he reckons he has a 13.5-inch knob, 34 centimetres, that is. Now, he is in a feud at the moment. A feud.
You would be, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I know. Dueling with swords, isn't it? He's in a ugly feud with arch rival Roberto Cabrera, who claims to have the world's biggest. Mr. Cabrera says he measures, are you ready for this?
I'm hearing you.
19 inches.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that definitely would. That would be a drama, wouldn't it?
That's a skipping rope.
That'd be ridiculous. But so you said, you were saying the guy with the 13.5-inch. You're telling me he had troubles, like getting acting on his.
He reckons that he can't find roles, decent Hollywood acting roles, because he's got a big cock.
Well, he wouldn't. He probably wouldn't get a job in Baywatch with his speedos, would he?
No, but do you remember
mate? Maybe he's putting in for the wrong movies, Luke.
Well, what would you suggest?
Well, them 4X ones, mate. He have movies everywhere.
Well, they've actually just brought out a new Disney movie, Dumbo. He could be the stunt double.
Oh, my God. You had me in stitches the other night, mate, and that was when you were saying on it normally, you know, regular, and then you said, oh, no, no, it was actually 2013, and it was 2:30 in the afternoon. It lasted for about 5 seconds, mate. You had me in stitches.
So long as I make you laugh, Pete, that's the main thing.
Have a good weekend.
Have a good one, Softy.
Bye, mate.
See ya. Just have to correct something. You up until recently, until the Singapore summit, you could not see North Korea on Google Maps, but Jess is telling me that now you can.
Well, there's now a new map
of
North Korea on Google. So there's a lot of new stuff that you can see that you couldn't before, and the internet's kind of going crazy over it.
Isn't that amazing? So things are going pretty quickly. How long till a McDonald's and a Taco Bell and a Pizza Hut opens? It's only a matter of time. 1-3-3-3. Would you go on a tour of North Korea?
No, I don't think I would you? I mean, I am very curious, though, but the people, I don't know. I think it would be a bit terrifying.
But don't you, you're one of those people, Jess, that you've traveled a lot. Your passport is unbelievable. You travel to experience other cultures. I mean, you and I have both been to the United States, and whilst it's great to go to the States and do all those things that you do, you're not experiencing really another culture, are you? But you go to Asia. I've been to Asia, as you know. I've been to Cambodia, Vietnam, China, India. And you really do experience another culture.
Yeah, but I also disagree with how they're living their lives there. And I think it's really sad. I think I would find it really disheartening and frustrating to be there because the people don't have any freedom.
Well, that's true. A lot has to be done. A lot still has to be done. And how many people are in those gulags, in those jails? And we just don't know. Political prisoners, convicted of what? Have they faced a trial? These things, I think, have to be addressed, but one thing at a time. The denuclearization of North Korea is a big, big step. What do you think, folks? 1-3-3-5-3. There are also more claims coming through that members of the ADF have committed war crimes while serving in Afghanistan. Look, you've probably seen that Nazi flag at the back of a vehicle, which to me is totally inappropriate. The photo was taken back in 2007 and it shows a large swastika emblem hoisted over an Australian military vehicle. Now, two separate defence sources have identified a particular soldier as the individual who took the flag to Afghanistan. But let's get back to the more serious of these allegations. And that is that members of the ADF committed war crimes. Now, that's pretty strong stuff. On the ABC the other night, Four Corners, they were interviewing a number of local men who were in tears because their families had been shot. They claim by Australian soldiers. Now, I wasn't there and you weren't there. I don't know what happened. The ADF are saying that, no, those men were armed and they were shot in the course of war. Well, what rules are there in war? What rules are there anymore when you have an enemy that recruits young children? When you have an enemy that instructs young children to be suicide bombers? What are the rules? What are the rules when they have people prepared to strap explosive to themselves in order to have a small win? What rules are there when they have 13-year-old boys posing as sheep herders with grenades strapped around their waists and automatic weapons under their coats? What are the rules when you're fighting this enemy in Afghanistan? Many of you would argue maybe we shouldn't be there in the first place. That's another argument. But as I said, I wasn't there. You weren't there. Did members of the ADF commit war crimes? What are war crimes when you're fighting an enemy that's prepared to use chemical weapons against their own people? Let's talk. 1-3-3-5-3. G'day, Bob.
How are you?
I'm very well, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, not bad, mate. Not bad.
Good on you.
Oh, how you going, Simon?
He's gone.
Yes, of course.
Simon's gone for the day.
He'll be back. That's right. Yeah, that's gone. Yeah, cool. We want to talk about war crimes.
Well, there are some pretty serious allegations being pointed towards members of the ADF. I wasn't there. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I think they were talking just SAS and stuff that did time over there.
Yes.
Because of, the seriousness of our jobs.
Sorry, our jobs. Bob, you are an SAS man?
Oh, no, ex-SAS now, yeah.
Ex-SAS. Did you go to Afghanistan?
Did three tours, yeah.
Okay. I've got so many questions I want to ask you.
Oh, I know, but there's probably some I might not be able to answer.
Well, you heard what I said before I took your call.
Yeah.
What are the bloody rules when you're fighting an enemy that has no rules?
Well, if normal infantry have rules of engagement, they've got to be, like, you know, shot at before they can shoot back.
Okay.
But special forces don't have those rules, you know, because we are taking the fight to them.
Mm-hmm.
So we do a lot of raids and night raids and whatever else. But, you know, what are war crimes? You know, you ask the question, I don't know what they are. But how do you send a boy in to do a man's job when we did, we come back and everyone's patting us on the back and then they want to lock us in cages now? You know, I don't get it. I'm pretty nervous because I'll tell you, we did some stuff over there that normal people wouldn't want to do.
Like what?
You know.
No, I don't.
Killing people. You know, what else do you do over there? I mean, like, yeah, as you said about the little boys coming in, acting as sheep herders and blowing us up. You know, we had like a ring around us that we couldn't have these people inside this ring, you know, because they were going to blow us up. Like, there was one stage there we couldn't even stop, like when we were driving around, you know, like in, say, Bora Bora or wherever, Kabul. We wouldn't stop. We'd knock them emergency service vans out of the way. Like, because every time we stopped, they blew us up at the lights, you know? I've only just recently got out. Like, started 94, 2017, I came back. I'm still suffering now. Like, I sleep on the floor. I've had to move the kids and the wife out to another house because I just don't want to hurt them, you know? Like, with whatever I've got to do to get over this. So.
What do you mean you don't want to hurt them? You're scared that you might do something you'll regret?
No. Like, scare them, you know. I've only got young boys, so, you know, because I'm still suffering. I get up at night, go for a wander. And I'm just, you know, just to keep everything good and safe, you know, because, like, 22 years I spent doing all that over there and... It's not nice over there, you know. Like, I don't understand this war crime thing. It's still got me. So, you know, who do they call when no one else can do the job? Like, they call us.
That's right.
And,
that's right.
You know, now they want to put us in cages. I tell you what, they wouldn't want to put us all in cages because when we work a way to get out, because we will, it won't be nice. You know, like...
I hear what you're saying. We've asked you to do... Our government has asked you to do something very untidy, very, very untidy. No one wants to really. It's all very well for politicians like the Prime Minister to go over there and give you all a pat on the back and a bit of a pep talk. But does he really, really know?
No.
What you guys are going through? I had one of your comrades ring me a couple of weeks ago, Bob.
Yep.
And yes, he was telling me that he shot dead a 13-year-old boy.
I didn't want to say it, but, you know, that's what we did. We did that. You know, I did that twice.
What did you know? What happened?
Just was coming into our exclusion zone, and I was yelling at the interpreter, telling him to get down on his knees and stop. Like, he's got to stop because I'll put one in his leg, and I did, and he kept crawling towards us. So, and this is what I'm suffering with at the moment. Because one was like 12 and, yeah, they had burkas on and I had to do it. So that's the thing. I can't understand why I had to do it, but I had to. So I can understand why I had to, but I can't get my head around it because I have boys that age, you know. So
how well prepared are our SAS special troops and members of the ADF that see real action in the Middle East? How well prepared, how well trained are you to be able to go and do that, to be able, I was about to say to be able to block it out and just be a professional soldier, but you're living proof that you can't block it out.
You can block it out while you're doing it and while you're doing the job, but when you get back and you come back, it's the adjustment to normal life. Like, normal life isn't normal for us when we come back, and that's the hard thing, like trying to adjust. You know, I was walking through Coles, for instance, when I came back. It was a week after I came back on the second tour. And this lady's yelling at a shopping trolley about some wobbly bloody wheel or something. And, I just lost it. And I just told her, like, you know what? If that's your biggest problem, you know, you got no problems. Then I just walked out and I sat inside for a couple of weeks and just couldn't deal with this life, you know, the reality. Like, when over there we'd do stuff and, you know, some of the stuff that we saw them doing, you know, like with their laws and, you know, stuff like that is just crazy. I don't know if you can switch on and off. I know mates that can sort of, but they still suffer, you know, like they still think about things they've done that they had to do. Well, we never did stuff we didn't have to do. We got told to go out and do certain missions and we had to get the job done by any means. And that means by killing, that means by maiming, that means by doing whatever you have to do to survive, to get back and do what you have to do.
Were you ever told not to take prisoners?
No. No, we were never told not to take them, but they weren't going to, like, slap us around if we come back with none.
Did you see that story in the ABC the other night where there were local Afghanistani men in tears saying that Australian soldiers took uncles and other members of their family into a room and shot them?
Yeah, I saw that, but I can't really comment on it, you know, because, you know, it must have been some real dark circumstances, I think, because I don't really know what soldiers they were talking about, just normal military or...
Yeah, fair enough. Have you seen the picture, and mind you, it was taken back in 2007, but have you seen the photograph of the Australian military vehicle that has a large swastika emblem hoisted over it?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I know what the swastika is and whatever else, but I don't really promote that, you know. No. I'm not. It's just that certain groups have certain ways of getting their, you know, heads together, and like, we got to be closer than what anyone could think of. You know, I've got to know, say, Joe's next to me, I've got to know, you know, we've got all the same blood types so we can transfuse on each other, just like with brothers, you know. And the thing is, they do their thing and it's for their own reasons. They probably didn't have anything to do with why the swastika was invented and all that. You know, it had nothing to do with Jewish people or none of that. It was just to get their heads in whatever space they needed to, and that's the way they did it. I mean, I can't answer for them.
No, you can't. You can't. And I don't expect you to. One thing that concerns me greatly, Bob, is that you need help. And the Australian government has called on Bob to go and do a very, very dirty job.
Yeah, I'm getting help. That's okay. I'm sorting through it all. You know, like, I've got some medals that were given to me, and I didn't want them, so I was going to, like, throw them away. And my mother called me and said, "You know, Daniel, Bob, you know, your son, he won't like it when the medals go. So you better bring them back to me, or I'll never talk to you again."
Well, look, I tell you what, I understand why you may feel like throwing them away, and a lot of Vietnam vets did exactly the same thing. A lot of Korean vets did the same thing. Promise me that you give them to your mum, because one day you may feel like marching with them, and if you don't, maybe one of your boys might.
With my grandfather's, so
I
march with his, so my son marches with mine.
Well, there you are.
So yeah.
Well, Bob, you take care, and thank you for listening. Thank you for talking and being so honest. And good luck getting the help that you really deserve and need.
Okay, thank you very much.
You take care, mate.
Same with you, mate. See ya.
Bye bye. G'day, Kerry.
Hi. How are you, Luke?
I'm all right, Kerry. How are you?
Very well. My son's been in the Australian Defence Force for 10 years.
Right.
And it's not just a matter of what they have to do. He's been on multiple deployments, Afghanistan, Iraq, a few others. And it's what the government makes them do prior to leaving.
Okay, tell me. Talk to me.
My huge concern. My son, prior to going to Afghanistan, had to get onto an American site and purchase his own dog tags.
Really?
My son had a... Yes.
What, are you telling me the ADF doesn't provide dog tags?
They had run out of funds at the time. He was also meant
what?
To be...
What? The ADF had run out of funds and couldn't provide soldiers with dog tags?
Darling, we're using guns from 1985.
Really?
Yes, we are.
We can spend $60 million on public servants to refurbish their offices, but we can't provide members of the ADF dog tags? You can't be serious.
I am very serious. We purchased them from an American site. It cost us $60 plus postage. He was also meant to be deployed with multiple uniforms, was sent over with two and a sewing kit. And I said to him, if you have to shoot someone, are you going to turn around and say, oh, hang on a minute, wait, I have to sew on a button? Now, if my child had have come back in a dog bag, as they call them, body bags, yes, my face would have been plastered all over every paper in Australia and I would have vented till the cows come home.
Mm.
There is a lot they don't tell the average person.
Of course.
They cut their deployment fees many, many years back. Now, it's great that they get a lump sum when they go and do these deployments for 10 to 12 months at a time. But is $100,000 for 24 hours a day service worth putting your life on the line?
How much?
Well, if you come home with $100,000 like he did on one of his deployments. Now, if you're talking working 24 hours a day, that's $50,000 for your year, isn't it?
So how long was he away?
10 months.
And you got 100K for 10 months?
Yeah. Now, that's not just an 8-hour job, is it?
No.
No, that's 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
So you do the math on that.
High stress.
It is bugger all. Our football players here get paid more.
Yeah.
You know, and yet my child puts his life on the line.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not great. They don't tell them everything. Mm. And I get that they are trying to push women in the Defence Force at the moment, which is going great guns. But nobody wants their child over there.
No.
But I support him 100% in what he does. He's very good at what he does.
These accusations aimed at the ADF, these war crime accusations, do you know anything we should know?
No, I won't touch on that because of the area that my son's in. But it's not good what some of them do. But the circumstances that they're put in, I would say, have a huge impact onto what's going on.
Yeah. We have no idea, do we? And we just sanitise it. Oh, they're over there in Afghanistan. They're fighting the Taliban. They're fighting ISIS. We'll sleep well in our beds tonight knowing that the world's a better place and we won't try and think too hard about what they're actually going through. That's the way it is, Kerry. Kerry, thank you. And can you thank your son for his service?
Yeah, there was another quick one I wanted to touch on was your Coles and Woolworths shopping bags from yesterday.
Yeah.
My daughter's a manager at Coles and the huge supermarkets, and I believe most retailers in Australia were sent letters from the government over 12 months ago and had 12 months to put it into place. It is those guys that are pushing these bags, not the actual supermarkets themselves.
Mm.
And the profits actually go to the tags on the bags. This week, the tags in the Coles supermarket are going to a company called First Bite.
Oh, yes.
Which is for people that, yeah. And usually Red Kite, the kids with cancer, is another one.
Yeah.
Bravery Trust. So the money's going to good places. So that's
the money that we will pay for the extra bags.
Yeah, it goes to those companies.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. No worries, Luke.
Yeah, First Bite. I know we spoke to somebody from First Bite a little while ago.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great. My daughter's got a day off today. She's making 400 cupcakes for it. So
really?
We fundraise every time they have one of these on. Yep.
Yeah. Look, my point yesterday was we didn't actually ask for plastic bags. Once upon a time, the supermarkets gave you your groceries in paper bags. Remember the tall brown paper bags?
Yes, absolutely.
And they were recyclable. My dad, God love him, used to fold them up on the shelf under the sink and he used to use them for bits and pieces. The plastic bags that we get now at Coles, we have a special spot in the second drawer under the cutlery. There's one of those sock things and it's full of bags and we use them every day for dog poo. and we use them for bin liners. Now, I wonder, will the price of bin liners at Coles and Woolies go up?
Who knows? We'll have to wait and see, Luke.
Just wondering. All right.
All right, then. Thanks for your time, Luke.
No, thank you for yours.
Love the show.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
The Night Shift. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. The Night Shift.